That's my cue to start talking.
Yeah, now you're supposed to start talking. Sure. Frank's not here, so we have no idea what to do today.
Right. Get a whole new way to try to figure this all out.
Right. It's still going to be kind of sort of about fish, right?
Most of the time.
Hopefully. Right. And we got Carl here with us today, too. So Carl, keep us straight.
So it's me, Robert from Fish and Frank's, Captain Carl from KB Backcountry Charters, and RJ, the head man in charge at KDW here in beautiful Northport, right?
That's right.
All right. So we're going to talk about fishing, I guess?
Fishing, yeah.
All right. So I guess this week in fishing, one of the big news things that a lot of people still aren't aware of, because it just happened last night at midnight, is Red Grouper and Triggerfish are closed. They made an emergency closure.
Oh, I bet you half the people out there don't even know that. I didn't know that.
Yeah. The Gulf Fisheries Council, in their divine knowledge of scientific data that's usually at least a year or two behind, figures that we went over our quota.
2 years ago.
Yeah. So they decided to close it down at midnight last night, and theoretically Red Grouper will open again January 1st. And Triggerfish may open up in March, theoretically, maybe, possibly.
So how do they come up with these things like this?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure.
Are they getting their scuba gear on and diving down there?
No. No, what a lot of times they do is they actually go out with commercial fishermen and do assessments as far as the stocks go, as far as what they're catching, sizes of the fish, and where they're catching them at. And then they also have people sitting at boat ramps asking anglers about their catch for the day and hope that they're telling the truth.
Right. I think the other thing that they do is they do go to the commercial net guys, you know, guys, the trawlers, and they look at the bycatch.
Right.
And they can tell when the numbers are down of a certain fish in the bycatch. So,
right.
You know, normally they'll see so many triggerfish that have been scooped up, and now they're seeing a lot less triggerfish being scooped up. So I think that's where some of that number comes from.
Yeah, I just don't know how accurate they are with their counts, because I think it was 2 years ago they gave us an extended red snapper season because they found that their numbers were way off. So they gave us more for the recreational guys.
Right.
So it's like, how accurate are they really with these counts? You know,
well, and I don't know how you can be accurate. That's a lot of water out there.
It is. It's
and
just,
I think some of the things we see, at least on our level, maybe not on the scientific level, but you're catching fish and you're noticing, you know, gee, all the trout are pretty small this year.
Right.
Or there's not many of them around. Where'd the bigger trout go? So you have some concerns about that. But you're out there on the water doing your thing. And you can observe a whole lot better than some guy sitting up in Tallahassee.
Oh, observational science is sometimes far better than conventional science. You know, I mean, one of the things, and I'm going to put it out there, that I'll bet you the next thing that they make an emergency closure on or close the season down, period, for a couple of years is going to be gag grouper next.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Amberjack's going to be followed right there with it, too.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of talk this year about not finding any amberjack during the season.
Exactly. So. It opened August 1st, and I'm, you know, in that
maybe
shop.
Maybe I've seen two pictures on Facebook of people that have amberjack, and they weren't that big.
Right.
So,
you know, and
I've caught a lot of small ones this year. I haven't targeted the big ones, but I have caught a lot of small ones.
But it's just funny because, I mean, people come in all the time and they always want to brag about their pictures, which is awesome.
Right.
You know, and I haven't seen any amberjack pictures. None. And grouper season opened September 1st and I haven't seen any gag grouper at all except for a couple that spear fishermen have gotten. You know, and I think, like, you know, and this is going to coincide with some other crap that's going on, is red tide, I think, really put a hurting on our gag grouper population, and they just never talked about it because...
You know, that's true. I looked at a lot of the beach pictures, you know, where people are taking pictures of all the fish, and, you know, you try to analyze what kind of... A lot of ladyfish you see and things like that. And, but I have seen quite a few grouper in the mix of dead fish on the beach.
Well, the gags, they migrate more than all the other ones.
Well, your Jewfish or Goliath grouper and your gag grouper are the only two grouper out of our four species that actually grow up inshore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll have red grouper that'll come into, like, Boca Grande Pass babies, but they prefer, like, 40 feet of water or better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's why you'll find them in the passes once in a while, but nowhere near, like, legal size red grouper. And gag grouper, you'll sometimes catch 25, 28-inch fish inshore. But you usually catch a lot of little babies. I mean, you can go into, like, Placida Trestle, for example. You can fish right off that pier there and fish for mangrove snapper right underneath the dock and catch baby gags. I mean, like, 6 to 12-inch gag grouper. I can't remember the last time I caught a gag grouper off the Placida Trestle or the Tom Adams Bridge, Anger Pier area, because all those are... normal areas with baby gag grouper on them, and they haven't been around.
I would think that the juvenile fish are not as experienced in dealing with red tide. And if they've come up into the harbor and they get surrounded by it, they don't have any escape.
Right. But gag grouper and jewfish are also like homebodies.
Yeah.
You know, they like structure. They build a home and kind of stay there. So they would rather just kind of... batten down the hatches and wait it out.
When the phosphate docks were there, we used to dive the phosphate docks, and there was some huge...
You're brave.
Big, big fish down there. And diving it over the years, we used to see the same fish in about the same places. We'd given them names, you know.
Yeah.
Let's go visit Andy today, you know, and see what he's been eating.
Right.
You know, that sort of thing. But some of those guys are big enough to eat me, so...
Yeah, you're getting in that water. You're brave.
Yeah, nope. You know, and that's still a favorite hangout for the Jewfish. The Goliath grouper are always there still, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely a favorite haunt of theirs. It's just, it's strange that they have yet to bring that up, so I'm waiting for that one.
I saw an article just recently. They were talking about making a season on what they're calling Goliath grouper now.
Mm-hmm.
Juvenile ones, they were talking about the...
Yeah, the sizes. It was an odd slot limit. Mm-hmm. They were not too small, but then again, not too big. So.
Right. Yeah, a couple years ago, because some people said that they were going to open it up, and they haven't decided on that yet because the last data they had was from, like, 1984 when they decided to ban them strictly at all for any type of fishing whatsoever for commercial harvest or recreational harvest, and they hadn't studied them since.
Right,
so there was no data on them. So a couple of years ago, they actually went out and did a limited harvest from Collier County up to Tampa Bay of, I believe it was 100 or 150 Jewfish of different sizes, and then a couple few dozen from the East Coast of different sizes because they needed the data to find out where are they sexually mature at because they didn't have any of that. They had no idea.
We also know that the big guys don't have great survivability after they've been hooked and landed. So that might be a big negative to opening up a season for them, you know, where they're going to get targeted, and you will get some of the big guys depending on where you're fishing. And they don't seem to do very well with being caught.
In certain areas, yeah, they have a rough go of it. But I think the biggest thing is if they are going to open it personally, I think it should be a slot size.
Mm-hmm.
I think it should be like alligator tags where you have to pay like a lottery system to draw that tag.
Yeah.
And make it fairly expensive. You know, make it $150 or $250. Make it worth that person's while to actually want to do it so that way they hopefully do it legally. And only allow so many per county. And make sure there's also hook and line only and no commercial value at all. Can't sell it from commercial value in any way, shape, or form. I think those things would help exponentially. You know, and people complain about the Goliath being too many, but in reality, it kind of falls in the line of the alligators. So, you know, it They had to shut them down completely for harvest, and it made a rebound significantly. It took only 30 years to do it, too, which is kind of cool, versus the alligator took, what, 50 years before they started doing any types of harvest on those. And it's kind of neat to see an action taken by the Game and Fish where there's a success behind it versus a lot of times that animal never fully recovers and to the point where you can open it up to limited harvest or anything like that. Just kind of interesting, you know, and, you know, with the red tide that I was talking about with the gag grouper, that's the other thing that people have been getting very confused by. And we've got so many new people to this area. Red tide is out there basically from really honestly Manasota Key down to Boca Grande Pass. But it's in super small light patches. And there are some fish kills going on out there, but not a lot. But I think the biggest misconception, and Carl was talking about it earlier today, and I know you can explain this a little bit better, RJ, is people think that brown water is red tide because the tan in water has kind of a reddish tint to it in certain areas. And, you know, it's hard to explain sometimes to people what tannins are in the water, and they get confused by that.
It's basically tea. Yeah. If you take any kind of leaf and put it in warm water or even in cold water for a long enough period of time, it's going to leach all the tannins out of that leaf. And just about every kind of leaf on the planet's got tannins in it.
Right.
And just like you're making tea in your cup, you're going to get brown water if it's all in there together for a while. And then in our case here, it spreads out and goes down the rivers because that's where it's all coming from. It's all coming from our rivers.
Yeah.
And it spreads out over the top of the salt water. And that's why you see the brown swatches on the surface. And that's just, it takes time for that water to get salty enough to mix in with the rest of the water.
And that's where you start to see that reddish color
that's
sometimes,
right.
is where
that's
it's right. getting into that cleaner, clearer, saltier water. It takes no longer a brown appearance, but has kind of a reddish tint to it.
Right. And the tannin water doesn't have an odor to it. And if it does have any kind of odor, it's going to be a slight organic smell, kind of like dirt, where I tell you, you know, when you're in red tide,
yeah,
there's no, that's definitely red tide, boys.
Yeah.
Because I can't breathe.
Yeah. You get that tickle in your throat, tickle in your nose, your eyes can water a little bit, you get that little dry tickle cough going on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And some people it affects much greater than others, but it still affects every person out there. I don't know a single person who's oblivious to red tide.
Yeah, I've never met anybody either.
You're oblivious to it altogether?
It doesn't affect me.
You can't feel it?
Well, you've been out there a lot, Carl.
That's why I tell everybody if they feel anything, they have to let me know because it doesn't affect me.
Really?
No.
That's strange. So you're the first person I've ever met that it doesn't bother you?
Mm-mm. Not one bit.
Huh. I don't know.
Again, he's been out there and exposed to it a lot, so.
Yeah.
After a while, you just don't notice it anymore.
Some kind of immunity.
Yeah, you know.
So immunity or tolerance, one or the other. It just doesn't bother him.
It's a little bit of both, probably.
Probably, yeah.
So what have you been catching out there, Carl? I know that you've been doing quite a bit of charters lately, so.
The tarpon fishing, I mean, this is my favorite time of year for tarpon fishing. Because like I tell everybody, when everybody thinks tarpon fishing, the best time is during like April, May, June. Well, they actually have, that's when they're all in Boca Grande. They actually have reproducing on their mind more than anything. I mean, yeah, granted they're going to eat out there, but once they push up into our harbor, into our inland waters, their main priority is eating. They have to, they're getting ready to make a big migration south once we start getting cold, so they have to build up all that energy and fat and everything back up to make that migration. So our tarpon fishing is just phenomenal right now.
I think August and September are by far the two best months out of the year, personally.
I love it. You know, you could throw live ladyfish, live thread fins, but a lot of them were doing like artificial DOA bait busters. What's that new lure we've been?
No live bait needed.
Yes, the no live bait needed paddle tail. We've been using that. right now we actually have a shrimp run going on, so shrimp aren't working too right now. But
that's a pretty top secret thing, isn't it?
Just don't tell anybody.
Well, people don't realize it. You know, in the springtime, when the tarpon first show up out in Boca Grande Pass, they feed real heavy on the shrimp because March, April, and May, we have a lot of big shrimp around because of the cooler weather. And they're getting ready to migrate to start moving offshore because they know that they've got to do their annual spawn. And they know that there's going to be a changing in the weather with the tides and the warmer water and fresher water. But then we have a late summer run where it's, I don't know if they're necessarily the pink shrimp that are here in the spring, because we've got like 30 different species of shrimp in Charlotte Harbor, freshwater and saltwater both. But this time of year, if you're real observant out there on the water, and I mean, you got to be super observant. You see all this little bait out there dancing around, and every now and then you'll see a shrimp, and they're not big shrimp. They're, you know, 3 inches, sometimes a little better than that, but usually about the size of the average person's index finger.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see them jumping like something's chasing them. And this is during the daytime, which is even more unusual. So that tells you how many shrimp there really are out there. If you're seeing them during the daytime like that, they're getting displaced by the fresh water a little bit, but I think it's just the nature of their cycle of life during the summertime. And a 200-pound tarpon will absolutely eat a shrimp the size of your index finger.
Yes, they will.
I'm always amazed at how small of a bait a big tarpon will take.
Yeah.
Well, you like Skittles and M&Ms, don't you?
I certainly do.
So do I. Elephants love peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
It is the same kind of concept. You know, people don't think about that. They see this giant fish and think they need this giant bait. And we are, to some extent, you know, the ladyfish are the prime bait to use for tarpon this time of year. But shrimp and smaller bait fish will work exceptionally well, too. Just, I think the main reason why we avoid that is because there's so much other stuff for bycatch. You're going to catch your catfish.
Yeah, don't forget about them.
Your little trout, other ladyfish that are out there that don't have a hook in them. I mean, everything in the ecosystem pretty much eats a shrimp at some point or another in its life cycle. And I think that's why a lot of people avoid it. In addition to, they just don't think about how a tarpon can eat that shrimp.
Right. I think the other thing we're using artificials right now is you cut down on that bycatch also. You don't get as much as you will with a live shrimp.
I mean, you'll catch a little bit with artificial, but not as much.
Not as much, yeah. It won't annoy the hell out of you.
Some days.
What kind of artificial shrimp are you using, or are you using live shrimp?
Actually, I didn't have. The other day when I actually noticed it, because I was sitting there and I was a little frustrated and nobody was catching anything, and then the next thing I know, I see a shrimp just start jumping on the surface, and then I seen an explosion, so I was like, oh, I ain't got no live shrimp on me. So I actually went in my compartment, and I throw a lot of gulp shrimp for redfish. Well, I actually had 4-inch white gulp shrimp, and that's what I was using. I did notice that if I let it sink, I was getting a catfish on every cast. But if I threw it out there and just, like, bounced it real quick on the surface, bounce, bounce, pause for a second, bounce, bounce, and then I was getting the tarpon like that. And these are full-grown tarpon. I mean, we were hooking 180-pound tarpon on a 4-inch gulp shrimp.
Well, you got one last week that was 2 1/4, probably.
Yeah, that one was on a DOA bait buster.
Oh, okay. Yep. That one was a giant. Yeah. They put some really big fish out there. It's been really pretty impressive. Except for when I go out, I don't see any.
Right.
No.
You left too early yesterday.
Uh-huh.
I would have gave you guys the rod instead of the other boat.
I had other things I had to do, unfortunately. My only day off, and I still had to get stuff taken care of, which is frustrating.
And, you know, another thing that's really going on good right now is the redfish bite.
Yeah.
This is like a... Everybody always thinks Red October is the main time for redfish. Well, they start schooling up early August. This is the time of year where all of our redfish school up. I mean, we'll have schools out there from 50 fish to 300-400 fish in a school. You know, most of these fish are not going to be in shallow water because most of these fish are our breeders, And our breeding redfish live offshore year-round. And they only come in this time of year to breed.
And what size are they usually? What do you consider a breeder-sized redfish?
Anything on from 30 inches and up.
Yeah.
But these fish, they're actually accessible for a lot, like every boat, because a lot of these fish, these breeders, they live offshore, so they feel comfortable in deep water or around deep water access. So a lot of times they sit on our sandbars where anybody could actually really fish them.
So if you had a deeper drafting boat, you can get up there in the
three to four feet
of water and hang out along the edge of one of the bars and stand a good chance for hooking them?
Yeah, I mean, I'd sit there and soak either a half a blue crab, a chunk of ladyfish, a pinfish with his tail cut off, or I like to throw gold spoons for them too. The gold spoon, you could cover a lot of water and it's easy to find them. Once you find them, then you could switch it over and throw the cut bait or shrimp or anything you want in there. But gold spoons cover a lot of water and they're probably one of the best artificials for a redfish.
Plus, like you said, it's a good search bait.
Yeah, and I do use the weedless gold spoon. Half ounce or a quarter is the one I prefer, depending on what the bait is around that time of year.
Right. You ever use, like, a lure for a search bait?
Oh, all the time. I think that's a great way to do it. Is, you know, you come to an area, it looks fishy, you know, but you're not getting anything by tossing stuff in one direction. So you put it, like Carl says, you put a spoon on or something and drag it all over the place because you can cover a lot of area, you know, fan casting, starting on your left and working to your right. And when you get a hit or a bump or something like that, then you can toss your live bait or your cut bait in that direction. And that's a real effective way, especially with redfish, to try to find redfish. Because, like you said, they hang in clusters. They hang in groups. And that's helping to protect them from predators also as they stay in a tight group. A lot more eyes looking out to see what's going on.
Because dolphins are on the hunt.
Oh, yeah, wow. I heard that the other day at the El Jobin Bridge that there was a dolphin up by the bridge, and he was doing he was just running everything off. So.
There's been a lot of dolphins out there lately. It seems like they all just came out of wherever they were hiding.
Well, they know where the food's at, and they know that anglers are going to find food for them and make it easier for them to catch.
Okay, let me ask you this then: dolphin don't eat a tarpon, right?
I think they might take out a little one. I think if you caught like a 10 or 15 pounder up there on the flats, I think they would try to take it out because, I mean, they'll eat a 15 pound redfish.
Yeah, because I've been noticing once the dolphins move in on those on the bigger tarpon, the bigger tarpon actually leave the area. They'll push away from the tarpon for some odd reason. I don't know if it's competing for food or what.
Yeah, it might be a little bit of competition for food, but it also just means it's just the dominant species, so it just wants to move out of the way and just let them have their room. What do you think, RJ?
I know from being underwater with dolphins, if they don't want you around, they make a lot of noise.
Yeah.
And I think that's one way they clear the area out of their competition, because they're eating the same things that the tarpon are eating.
Right.
And they don't want to compete with the tarpon, so they start that underwater sonar squeaking stuff. And if you're a fish with a lateral line, that can't be very comfortable. I mean, they can actually use that to stun another fish. They send out so much sonic information, hits the fish's lateral line, and it stuns the fish. So, but I've experienced that numerous times underwater with dolphin. If they don't want you there, you're going to leave because they're going to make that noise, and it's not very pleasant.
I can see that. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's pretty darn cool, actually.
That actually goes off of the concept of, like, your GPS, your depth finder, and your side scan, putting out a ping, bouncing off the fish.
That's right.
Because, like, I shut mine off when I'm in shallow water going for red fishing because you don't need it on. You could see the bottom half the time. But I always shut it off when I'm going for, like, redfish or snook.
Yeah, side scan is certainly the worst as far as making noise that pushes fish out and away.
Mm-hmm.
I remember looking at tapes of Navy sonar. This is years and years ago off of Seattle, and the big schools of fish would be coming by, and the sonar, you'd be pulling a torpedo, basically, a sonar fish. and the schools would part away from the sonar. And the sonar is only like about 3 feet long, so it wasn't big like it was a predator, but it was making some big noise at that point. And those schools of fish would part and go in different directions. So I know that side scan is probably the worst underwater noise, you know, of the what we have available to us. So, yeah, turn your side scan off when you get into shallow water.
Even I found when you're out there in the deeper water and you got tarpon around you, sometimes turning that fish finder off, period, side scan, bottom machine, all of it, sometimes keeps the fish hanging closer to you.
That's right. That's right.
Because the other boats around you kind of ping-pong them back and forth, and at least they'll stay a little bit more consistent around you. I've seen that happen a few different times out there, you know, in a high-pressured area. It seems like, it would make sense to me. I don't want to be getting battered by all these radio waves coming across me, making all sorts of weird noises and vibrations in me.
Right, and sound underwater carries great distances.
Yes.
You know, way, way further than it does in the air. And it also has much more powerful effects underwater than it does up in the air. So that side scan and your bottom machine, all of that stuff is making noise. I mean, you talk about, I got to be quiet in the boat because we're in the shallow water and I'm going to wear my rubber-soled shoes and I'm not going to slam the lid on my live well. And in the meantime, your side scan's running and your bottom scan, your bottom machine is running. And every fish around you is hearing that, you know, just as bad as if they were hearing you walking on the deck. So
worry about your live well pump running.
And the live well pump is another one, too.
Vibrating the whole boat.
Yeah. Like I said, when you see it from the underwater side, you know, if you dive, I mean, you go pull your boat into reasonable water and then go underwater for a minute. Get off the boat, cool off, put your head underwater, and with everything running on the boat except the motor, and you're going to hear a lot of noise. I mean, your boat makes a lot of noise. Just the water is hitting the side of the boat makes a big slap noise underwater. So, and that's kind of how the dolphin find you. You know, they're listening for that. They got great hearing. They're listening for that, and they head on over to the boats. So,
yes, I can see that. So things going on at the shop have been getting better. You know, Frank's been really busting his butt, calling a lot of different manufacturers, distributors, direct from the companies, anything he can find. And it's been doing pretty good. We're starting to get some product in, and the coolest part is some of it's American-made. We're finding a lot more American-made companies. Because when we burned down, he had, I think, 72 or 74 vendors that he was buying from. And we forgot about some of them because, I mean, unfortunately, the place burns down, and with all the product that was on the wall, it's hard to remember who you bought from and what you had. So he's been on the horn calling everybody, talking to people, and finding some of this stuff. And the cool part is a lot of these little mom-and-pop places have stuff in stock. So we've been slowly getting product in. Last week we got in some pen reels, which we still have some left, which is cool.
We still have quite a few left, actually.
Got quite a few combos in this past week. But we did have a company bring in some spoons the other day for us to check out, and he's willing to make a few cool colors, and he can make them in weedless and stuff like that. And I got a pile of them in front of me, and I didn't get to talk to him, so I have no idea if he's able to make bigger ones or smaller ones, but these spoons are probably 1 ounce, maybe even 1.5 ounce. And these are your typical casting spoons. I mean, there's one here that's much smaller. There's one here that's probably 1/2 ounce. So they have a variety of stuff, but they have a couple custom colors. And I know you already saw them, so I'm going to let RJ check them out for a second. And
I got dibs on that one right there in your hand. The one thing that I noticed the other day about them, is any of these open?
Go ahead and open it.
It doesn't really matter.
You know, it's one of those things of spoons are a really cool year-round lure, but
like, feel that, you can feel it with your hand, feel that cup in it on the back side.
Yeah, it's got a really
I
deep
bet
cup
you that
on it.
Really puts a high wobble on it.
Yeah, and a spoon isn't just a spoon. That's the craziest part, is that you don't realize that putting a deep cup on it or a shallower cup or making the spoon wider or narrower all affects how that thing's going to swim.
Right, and the best swimming spoons are the ones that wobble, not the ones that around in a circle. And usually if the spoon is spinning, you're probably pulling it too fast to begin with.
Well, see, this is just me, but I never just reel in a spoon. I always use the weedless, but I always bounce my spoons back to it, but I never just reel them steady in. Because a lot of people are like, why don't you ever put swivels on you? I was like, because I don't reel them in like that. I just bounce them in the whole time. I make them flutter in the water. But that's how I do it.
Right. So what's your opinion about the colors on them, RJ?
I think the colors are pretty cool, but then again, do the fish think the colors are really cool?
Right. You know, we've got a white one here. We've got a pearl one. We've got one that's kind of a funky.
I've got kind of like a brown, and then it fades into more of a greenish gold. That one's pretty cool. And I got one called a crawdad that's kind of brown, fades into a brighter red. So it's interesting how he's done the colors on them. You know, it's not a uniform color. It's not a red spoon with a pattern on it.
Right.
If you turn it sideways, it's almost like how a fish is colored, dark on the top and white on the bottom.
Right. So. And they got different fades on them, too, which is kind of neat.
Yeah. They look like they'd work really good.
What would you use them for?
Redfish, mackerel, ladyfish. I mean, I could see a lot of different things being used for them.
If you're up north, the longer, browner spoons would be great for stripers off the beach, because they've got some weight to them and they look like they're pretty aerodynamic. So you probably cast the hell out of them, and I think that's something stripers would like, is that shape.
Right. Yeah. There's something unique about them. I mean, they are a little different than everybody else's spoon out there. You know, are they spectacular? Eh, they're not bad.
We don't know yet.
But I've seen a lot of spoons over the years, so I get a little jaded by that. But I like the idea that this company is also willing to do some custom colors, and they're willing to experiment versus some companies out there. These are the colors you've got to choose, and that's it. So the coolest part about him finding new companies is trying to branch out a little bit more and see if we can make some changes that can be better for
everybody
in general. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how they do. If they only come in these bigger sizes, I don't think they'll be a real big seller, you know, from what I can see here. You know, the bigger size is going to be more seasonal. It's going to be more, these would be more like king mackerel, using them to slow troll offshore for some of your cobia, possibly barracuda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
mackerel,
barracuda would like these
stuff
or
like
when
that.
Our bait's big inside.
Yeah, but you know, mostly for our inshore fishery for snook, redfish, and trout, you know, we usually don't use anything more than 3/4 of an ounce, and even then, that's starting to push it. Mostly, it's 1/2 ounce and 1/4 ounce.
Yeah,
especially this time of year.
But I think it's really neat that Frank is bringing in American companies.
Yes.
And American companies that are willing to learn and experiment and
change their stuff
around.
They're not stuck in one way.
Well, you know, give Yozuri a call and ask him if you can get a certain color pattern. Ain't going to happen. But I can see where an American company that's, you know, small mom and pop, and you say, look, I want one that's this long, but he's got to have a black spot towards the end where the back treble hook is. You could probably get that from them if it's an effective lure. So.
Right. Yeah, they're willing to experiment a little bit and not have to wait until, the 3/4 before they can make changes for the following year and then hope that it makes the cut.
They're not retooling a factory, you know, that's producing thousands of lures in an hour. So.
Right. Yeah, so it is kind of cool in that aspect. So we've, you know, Frank's been finding some really neat stuff, and we're going to, every week we're getting a little bit more in and a little bit more in, but it's just kind of neat to see something new and
different.
I guess not new, but definitely different.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that has made Fish and Frank's unique, and that can get carried over. I mean, there were some things that will never come back.
Right.
After the burn. They just can't come back because they were physically tied to that space. But one of the things that makes the store unique that allows it to move somewhere else is this idea that there's always something different, there's something new, there's always bits of new information to take and use and make you a better fisherman, make it the sport more enjoyable to you.
Well, and some of these companies aren't going to come back just for the sheer fact of, I mean, honestly, this has been the busiest the fishing industry has ever seen this last year and a half, basically, since COVID and all that crap.
Why? Because nobody wants to work?
Well, yeah. But, oh. But those same people just want to fish on top of that. But, like, Frank had a company that he was trying to buy some different spoons from. Well, we couldn't find any distributor that had this specific spoon, but we found a different distributor that had a knockoff of that spoon. So Frank was going to order some, but then he's like, wait a minute, I'm just going to call the company directly and see how the, you know, what they'd like to do, because I'd rather buy their lure because they're the ones that designed it. They invented it. I don't want to take that away from them when someone else has got a knockoff of theirs. So he called them up and they said, hey, yeah, well, problem is that we can't keep up. We don't have enough help. We don't have enough product. And you can call us back in about 6 months or a year from now if you'd like, and we might deal with you then. But for right now, we don't want to deal with you. And Frank's like, I'm trying to buy your product rather than someone who stole your product and is a knockoff. I was trying to give you guys that business. I'd rather give it to you than the other guy. And they're like, eh. You know, call us back in about a year. And Frank's like, tell you what, you guys can try to call me back in a year and maybe we'll discuss this. But in the meantime, I'm going to go buy the other product because I need it.
Yep. You know, that's business 101. You know, right. Somebody wants you to buy your product, you sell it to them. And if you don't want to sell it to them, they're going to go somewhere else and get the competitor's product.
Right. And Frank's honorable enough where he wants to try to take care of the people who came up with that stuff first. You know, he'd rather deal with them. You know, it's their idea, their product. They worked hard for it. They deserve first shot at it. But, you know, if you can't get it, you can't get it. So you move on to plan B, C, D, E, and F.
That's going to be the survivability of any business in the situation that we're in right now.
Right.
You know, what's the best way to do business? And you had better figure that out pretty quick, you know. It's like, what's the best way to catch a tarpon?
Right.
You know, if I'm going to go out there with a 14-inch long offshore lure and drag it all over the harbor, I might snag a tarpon.
Right.
But I'm not going to catch a tarpon in the mouth, you know. So
right.
You got to have the right stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, people need to stop and think about all that. That's how it works. You know, and we're slowly getting the stuff in. We got
We're starting to fill up.
Yeah, we're starting to fill up pretty good. I mean, Quantum has been amazing with getting us product. And, you know, they've always made good to great product. It's just one of those companies that just kind of gets overlooked a little bit, you know, because they had the Cabo and the Boca that they've been making for, what, 12 years probably or whatever, and that's a home run.
Yeah, and then they
came out
with
Smoke is an amazing reel. They're Accurist. I mean, they've got some really good product that has held up very well in the saltwater industry. And I don't know what the stigma is sometimes with people because, like, they associate Quantum with more freshwater. They seem to notice it as a freshwater product. And yet Shimano, for some reason, they don't associate with a freshwater product. But if you go onto Shimano's website, and I'm not knocking Shimano because they make good stuff too, but you go on their website and look at their brochure, they don't have any saltwater reels listed until you get into, I think it's the Sustain or the Stellas, which are $600 reels.
I know.
And it's not even their smaller ones. It's their larger reels. They're 6,000, 8,000, 10,000 series reels. You know, they've got a couple smaller ones in their saltwater category. But I think out of, let's say, I'm going to just pull a number out, let's say 24 styles of reels that they make, there's only like 4 or 5 that fall into their saltwater series of reels. There's just certain reels that people don't understand that there's certain reels that hold up better in saltwater. It's not necessarily the brand, it's probably the model, you know, that will hold up longer in our saltwater and our highly tannin water, because people don't realize that tannin water is also a corrosive too. Because those oak trees, pine trees, mangroves,
Yeah, and, that, all and, that's, that and leaves, that's all acidic, all of that stuff.
Acidic, so exactly.
Acid and metal don't go well together.
Right, and neither do salt. So you add two corrosives together, and it eats stuff up pretty quickly, and people don't think about that sometimes. It's like, you know, my reel used to last me for years up on my lake up in Michigan. And it's like, okay, number one, that's fresh water. Number two, there's no salt. You have some tannins up there in the waters up there because there are some lakes that are a little higher acidic.
And not to knock freshwater fishing in lakes up north, because you can certainly go for lake trout that are as big as you. But generally speaking, you're not getting fish that are going to beat you up.
Right.
You know, you catch some nice-sized bass and trout and things like that. But you come down here to the harbor, and, you know, there's
you still
half
know what you're going to hook.
That's right. And there's a half a dozen fish down here that if you hook them, they're going to beat you. Even a little jack will beat you and your rod up.
Canal tunas?
Yeah.
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 So they're starting to show up.
Yeah. So it's not just the water and the corrosiveness. I mean, your equipment's going to get beat when you come down here and catch these fish.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's
I never broke a rod when I fish fresh water up north.
No.
I've broken several rods down here.
It's easy to do. There's no question about that. It amazes me how that works out.
Yep.
You know, and, you know, speaking of, like, not breaking rods or anything, you know, trout season's been in effect, and that's one of the fish that people are going after out there. And it's still slow this time of year because they're a cold water fish. They like it much cooler, but there are enough fish out there, and I think you can have a blast catching them on lighter tackle. Everyone wants to throw too heavy a tackle at them. But I've been hearing of some good fish down there still in Pine Island Sound, where it's a little cleaner, a little bit clearer water, so it's a little bit cooler. Some up in Lemon Bay, some up inside the main, I guess, intercoastal part of the Venice area, and that along the North Jetty there, and going up inside, they're catching a few in there. You know, and they're not giants, but they're at least legal size, you know, and that's been going on okay.
Yeah, and a trout on light tackle in salt water is a pretty good fighting fish. And it's a lot of fun to pull them in with light tackle. I mean, you get to listen to the drag scream a little bit, and, you know, your rod gets bent quite a bit, and, you know, you got to work them in instead of trying to water ski them in.
And, which everyone seems to do because they're using their big snook and redfish tackle.
Using the big snook rods, right, yeah.
Yeah.
But,
trout fishing is going to pick up here soon.
It will. Yeah. You know, our next cold front, I think, will be on, I think we're
I think we're just a week or so away from that first cold front coming.
Oh, don't tell me that.
Yeah, that's what it looks
like. What's coming
up?
I don't know. I don't like the cold, for one.
What is coming up?
But it's also going to make my tarpon leave, too, if it gets too
cold. Not this first one.
Yeah, not the first one.
Yeah,
what's
still
coming up here?
I don't
here,
like the cold. A full moon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're probably about a week out from a full moon, and that's when our first cold front will probably hit. And then 4 weeks after that will be our second cold front.
Oh, no, we're 81% right now. So next week we'll probably have a full moon.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. We'll be a first little cold front will come through. And then the second cold front will be 4 weeks after that.
Right. And what we've got over the top of this part of the country are highs. That's why these tropical storms that have been forming all around us, they're all bending out into the Atlantic or pushing up into Texas and Louisiana, because the highs are sitting over the top of us. But the high is a big corridor for cold air.
Right.
And so as the cooler air comes down, it's going to come down over the top of these highs. And this is the time of year that the highs don't really move.
Yeah, that's why
you're
seeing
the famous
that storm
Bermuda high. You know,
just sits.
Well, that one that hit Texas, it's still sitting over Louisiana.
Yeah,
just
it's bouncing off the high that's sitting over Florida. Right.
I know. I was supposed to go to Louisiana.
Yeah, it's kind of squashed
up
and flattened it out, and just pouring a lot of rain down there.
Yep.
Louisiana got wrecked.
Yeah, we had a show on just a little while ago from a group that went out there to do some rescue work.
Yeah.
And they were saying they left because they can't do anything because it's raining hard all day long. Nothing is happening.
Right.
I mean, they're not even getting the electrical restoration stuff done because there's so much water. 20-something inches, I think he said, is what they got.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a lot of water. You know, all the rivers and streams are at peak.
Mississippi's flowing bad, they said. Because I got a couple buddies that I talked to over there, and they said they still don't have power in a few areas.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's bad news over there. If you want to donate to any of those causes, there's a number of organizations that are going there and doing stuff, and they certainly do need help.
Right. So. Yeah.
Yeah, they got wiped out on this last one.
Oh, the coolest part is that's when, I mean, with all the weirdness of society, it's great when you see people actually getting together and doing stuff like this. It sucks that it takes a disaster, a natural disaster.
Right, right.
To bring people together to go help other ones, you know. It's
but it's still good crazy. That people are doing it, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah, people coming from all over the country to go to a destroyed area, basically, where they're going to be living in the back of their car while they're going out working their butt off all day long.
Yeah.
Clearing debris and feeding people and all the rest of that. So,
yeah.
So there is a lot of good stuff still left in our society.
Absolutely.
As opposed to what the mainstream media has been telling us.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's just awesome. You know.
So offshore, has anybody been able to get offshore? We got about 8-9 minutes left here.
They've been getting offshore, but it hasn't been spectacular. You know, I mean, the main thing that's been going on out there is basically the mangrove snapper,
snappers.
Lane snapper, and yellowtail snapper. Those have been doing really good, and especially at about 20 to 25 miles is when you're getting into the bigger, like, yellowtail snapper and bigger lane snapper.
Any further out than that, it's got to be pretty rough, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, and there's been some moments where it's been pretty rough, but we've had some fairly, you know, this last week was fairly mild with the seas out there. It just, you know, I think it's been tough because we're in that weird point where, you know, the grouper obviously weren't doing great. The AJs weren't doing great unless you ran out 65 miles. And if you stuck in closer, you're fishing groceries. And people always have this big dream of, oh, I need to catch grouper. I need to catch grouper. And I don't know. I would rather eat a snapper, or honestly, I'd rather eat a grunt over a grouper. Especially a red grouper. Red grouper does nothing for me at all. But the other thing that is going on out there, that they're still catching a lot of the smaller dolphin.
I've been seeing a lot of pictures of people picking up dolphin.
You know, the little peanut dolphin have been being caught out there, and then you're starting to see a splattering of Spanish mackerel that I've been hearing about up off of Sarasota. Which means they're working their way this way.
Last week, there was a pile of them out in front of Little Gasparilla.
Okay. Yep. So Spanish mackerel are starting to move into the area, which signifies king mackerel aren't too far behind them.
And they were close. Yep. They were up to a mile out.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. Because those fish don't like a lot of fresh water. They can handle a little bit of it, so they'll come inside on a good incoming tide. As soon as that tide starts to turn around, they're running the opposite direction from it as quickly as possible. So over the next couple weeks, you should see some good numbers of Spanish mackerel. Hoping in the next several weeks, we'll start to see some king mackerel in here.
And this is going to be around the passes?
Yeah. Your Spanish mackerel will actually start to move into the lower end of the harbor from the pass up to about Cape Hayes. And then within a week or two after that, they'll start to follow that tide coming up into the holes, and then they'll run right back out again. You know, but they'll move in little wads according to the tide, but they'll stay out along the passes and along the beaches for, what, the next 2 months, wouldn't you say? Usually,
yeah, probably two and a half.
Usually late November when it starts to really cool off is when they boogie and head back further offshore again.
It's the furthest you ever seen a king come in.
Marker one.
Really?
Yeah. I had one of the customers, he caught a 48-incher at marker one. This was 10 years ago.
There a big drought that year? Do you remember?
It was in the springtime. That much I do remember. It was the springtime. But I've had guys catch, you know, 30 inchers inside the 20-foot holes in the fall. It happens. It's not a common thing, but
Depends on what the rivers are doing at that point, too.
Yeah.
You know, we're pushing a lot. Like right now, I think we are. We're pushing a lot of fresh water.
A whole lot of fresh water. Yeah. We're finally playing catch-up to our drought that we were in. I mean, you think about what, May and June, we were a couple feet down below normal of what we should have been. And now we finally caught up, and now we're going to go ahead of that, which is good.
Yeah. Some reserves in. The only bad thing is I can't cut my grass. I've had to hire Serpa guides to get me to the front door.
Yeah, you need your
I know it's in that direction somewhat.
You need your Pine Island Nikes to wade through the water to get into the house. Yeah. Yeah, that's the way it's been going. But, you know, Carl's going to be our guest for the next several weeks, if not who knows how long, because Frank's trying to get all this stuff figured out the shop. And honestly, he's worked really hard and deserves some time off for a little bit.
He does need some time off.
You know, but Carl's from KB Backcountry Charters. He does charters on his own boat. He will go with people on their boat. He does some offshore fishing on people's boats. What's your phone number, Carl, in case somebody wants to call you up and do something with you?
941-565-7325.
One more time so they can grab a pen.
941-565-7325.
Right, and you can always stop at the store, too, and that information is there, too.
And Carl works there on Mondays and Thursdays, so you can always stop in and talk to him about all the fishing in the area. And, of course, we got RJ, who's absolutely the most brilliant person in this room by far, you know, and he's the operator at KDW here in Northport, and I appreciate you. And I'm Robert from Fish and Franks. Hope to see you in the store, and we'll hopefully you'll listen to us next week and we didn't babble anything silly.
Say goodbye, Robert.
Goodbye, Robert. Just to ease my mind.